Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Look on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Anybody ready for some football? Sunday can't get here soon enough, and yet the Patriots have to wait until the last game of the day because it'll be a night game against the Indianapolis Colts. Welcome into the playbook for a Tuesday on Patriots.com radio. I'm John Rook, and we survived the bye week. At least it's my impression that we've survived the bye week, but now it's back to the business at hand and trying to turn our attention forward to these next four games, which we've spent some time over the last couple of weeks discussing as being the most challenging part of New England's 2014 schedule. And you have at Indianapolis, home against Detroit, at Green Bay, at San Diego. And four pretty solid quarterbacks that can probably each beat you by themselves, pretty much. One step at a time, on to Indianapolis, as the saying goes. Now, before we get going here today, a couple of huzzas to throw out. First of all, huzzah to our friend Steve and Colleen for providing lunch and including me in on that today. Thank you, Steve, for remembering me. Nice of a fellow Texan to, you know, not forget. It's also good. So I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Speaking of not forgetting, Veterans Day. Hug a veteran today. Say thank you to a veteran today. I think that, you know, as passionate as we are about football and about this particular franchise and organization, I think we need to be mindful of the fact that we should be equally passionate over those who serve our country in the form and in the manner in which they do. Hasn't been that long ago since we've actually had a Patriot player be a Patriot overseas as well. I love the hashtag that's going around and it's made Twitter runs today. Hashtag we are all Patriots. That's a good one. Good one to kind of latch onto today, even though, of course, as you're aware, this is hashtag Nitpick Tuesday, and I'll get to those in a moment. Anybody remember the last New England Patriot player who was a part of the military? Anybody come up with that one? Did the PFW boys discuss this at all, Kev? I didn't think so. Well, I'm pretty sure, before you go off half-cocked here and Google it, I'm pretty sure that the last Patriot player who was in the military was Eric Catani, who was part of the Navy Reserve, played football for Navy, and was recently a part of the Patriots, I believe, in 2011, maybe, or 12. He was either 11 or 12. And that's just off the top of my head because I was thinking about it earlier today. It has happened before in the past, but I believe Eric Catani was the last one. Last Patriot football player involved with a military career as well. So, at any rate, got any other thoughts? Any other Patriot players that have come to mind that have served as a part of the military? Feel free to forward them this way, and we'll give them their due recognition above and beyond today as well. Webradio@patriots.com for the email address. Now, as far as our nitpicks to go today, yes, I know, there was no game, so there's no real definitive nitpick. But this is sort of taking a step further from what we talked a bit about last week. You know, mid-season MVPs and things to work on for the second half of the season and you know, what needs to be improved upon and which direction this team can go. And we danced around all of that stuff last week during the bye week, if you weren't with us. I would say, as far as today is concerned, for our hashtag Nitpick Tuesday, I did write a little about this in today's View from Above column here on Patriots.com. But to me, there's one overriding improvement that needs to be made in this team to assure themselves that they will continue to be in the running for an opening round bye in the playoffs come January. Now, what I'm going to say is going to contradict that, because I know that the last two Super Bowl champions, the last two Super Bowl championship teams in Seattle and in Baltimore, were two of the most penalized teams in the league in their respective seasons. And it seems to be that that toughness factor has sort of led that to being a potential factor again this year. Because as I looked at some of the statistics through Week 10, as we are now in Week 11 out of 17 overall, that I believe the top six teams overall in penalties called against are all in the playoff hunt. In other words, I think either in first or second place in their respective divisions. So that should, you know, tell you that, you know, physical play is still gaining results, even though there was a mandate by the officials and by the league this year to clean up a lot of things. You know, we've talked about the defensive pass interference that were being called, the offensive pass interference is being called, and more specifically, defensive holding in the linebacking core and in the secondary, which was a real point of emphasis, we know, during the preseason and has been called again during the regular season, not quite as much as it was with the litany of flags during the preseason, but it's still been a real point of emphasis. And even so, and we've seen a lot of those flags called, and a lot of them have been called on the Patriots, it still doesn't seem to be hurting anybody with wins and losses. So here's my theory. Feel free to agree or disagree. But if the Patriots do not, and my number one nitpick for the second half of the season, and this is what I want you to tell me today here, webradio at patriots.com. Make sure you know that the phone lines are open and available. 855-PATS-500. Toll-free telephone number 855-PATS-500. Twitter address, at JR Broadcaster. Find me on Twitter. Let's go. At JR Broadcaster on Twitter. John.Rook on Facebook, R-O-O-K, the last name. Submit a friend request if you haven't done it, and then you can post and we can chat during shows. The number one thing that I want you to consider today for your nitpick is, what is the one thing that you fear will come back to haunt the Patriots in the season's second half? What is it? Is it the penalties? Is it injury? Is it lack of production from run game? Is it, you know, getting gouged up the middle defense? What is it? What's your number one concern for these Patriots for the final seven games of the regular season? And that is sort of like a giant nitpick today. That's kind of what we're doing. We're picking at the big ones today. We're picking the big ones today. Okay, there's something just a little gross about that, so I won't go any further. But that's what I want you to consider. And here is my theory. Because they made the initial effort to, you know, hone in on and cut back on a lot of the clutching and grabbing done by defenders on receivers before the season started. We saw, you know, the litany of flags fall in the preseason, a little less so in the regular season, but it's still an increased number of defensive interference and defensive holding penalties over this time a year ago. My guess is that even though the successful teams are making more than their fair share of penalties, and the Patriots are definitely one of those teams, I'm of the opinion that the league is really going to crack back on this stuff as we get down to crunch time. That's just my opinion. Really on the opinion, really of the mindset here that, you know, the Patriots must learn how to defend without clutching, without grabbing, without holding, you know, without tackling, you know, guys before the ball gets to them, all of that stuff. I really feel like this is going to be almost a re-emphasis of the initial rule that came into play before this regular season ever started. That things get so much more magnified because there's so much more pressure on teams to perform, especially those that are looking up in the standings. And right now the Patriots have a two-game lead over both the Dolphins and the Bills in the AFC East because both kind of spit the bit this weekend. They both had legitimate shots to win. Both probably could have won and did not do so. So they're going to be fighting for their very playoff lives over the next month to stay in the wild card mix if not, somehow challenge the Patriots. And listen, these next four games, as we've spent some time talking about already, these next four games are not going to be a piece of cake. And I know last week, our prediction Thursday centered around what you think the Patriots' record over the second half of the season will be. And where do you think the potential losses, if you're picking them to have one, where will they come from? Some of you, you know, went out on a limb and said they're going to go 7-0. I don't really think that's going to be the case. Maybe you're just being, you know, the eternal optimist fanboy here, but okay, that's fine. You're allowed. You're allowed. I understand we have some of those, and that's fine. And guess what? If the Patriots turn out 7-0, then you look like a brilliant genius. And you might win yourself a prize. You never know. I just say with the next four games, I think it's highly unlikely. If you look at it logically, knowing where your shortfalls are, and knowing that you've got, you know, four quarterbacks that can be considered arguably in the top five in the NFL, you know, by some poll or by some writer somewhere, that it's going to be difficult over the next month. This is the crucial time of the season. We have arrived at crunch time, kids. Second half officially starts, even though we're in week 11, but you're coming off your bye week. That's considered the second half of the season. Crunch time is here. We have crunch time this month. We have playoff push next month. What is the one thing you feel like is the biggest obstacle for the Patriots to overcome during crunch time? Mine has to be injuries. My biggest nitpick, My biggest thing is penalties. Injuries are second. Penalties. Wrote about that today in the View from Above. Penalties has been something I've been nitpicking on all year long. I mention it almost every week in the column. We talk about it almost every week here on the program. It's penalties. Penalties come down to two things: coaching and self-discipline. So one or the other is not happening for New England. One or the other. It's either not a good enough job coaching or not good enough self-discipline amongst the players. Now, you may have your own opinion on that. And if you do, I hope that you'll share it with me here today. But frankly, right now, I think it's more about self-discipline than it is about coaching. I think this coaching staff has finally figured out what kind of team they have here. And it's taken them a good solid half of the year to figure it out. But I think they know what this team's limitations are. They know what this team's strengths are, which is why one of the reasons we've seen, I think, overall better play calling from Josh McDaniels, to be quite honest with you. You know, while we were deriding some of his play calls, especially earlier in the year when things weren't working, he was doing things to try to find a happy medium. He was calling plays that he thought this team might be capable of pulling off, and yet they weren't. Big example would be, you know, one of Paul's bugaboos, and that is, of course, the hurry-up stuff to try to catch the other team off guard in short yardage situations, which has never worked this year. I think they're 0-for-4 or something in those situations. And so I just don't know why they'll continue to call it, although it wouldn't shock me to see that happen at least once or twice more before the season's over. A lot of it depends on what they see, you know, film-wise from the opposition when they're game planning every week. I think they've just figured out who this team is and what this team is capable of. So if this team is capable of doing the things that we've seen over the last couple of weeks in scoring points, especially, and game planning to the opponent defensively, then you're going to see more and more teams eventually catch up to what the Patriots are doing, because you got to remember, other teams do as much homework, it would appear, I would think, as the Patriots do. Everybody does their fair share of homework here. Some implement it and scheme it a little bit differently, and maybe that does give New England a bit of an edge on occasion because, you know, they do have some bright guys here. But at the same time, with things being more magnified in terms of the calls, with teams really playing more desperately because they're probably looking up in the standings, you know, Detroit notwithstanding, Colts notwithstanding, because they're, you know, riding high. Green Bay may or may not still be a game behind by the time the Patriots get to Green Bay. San Diego, whew, they actually, San Diego, that I realized, and we talked a little about this last week, San Diego may not be as big a deal, and only because they might be dead and buried in the AFC West before New England ever gets to San Diego. Because they're looking up at both Kansas City and Denver in that division. So San Diego might be a relative non-factor by the end of the month. Possible. 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 But we'll hold on to that for a while because there's still a ways to go before we ever get there. So because of all this increased magnification and all this increased sense of urgency, and because the Patriots seem to know themselves a little bit better, this is why I arrive at my decision that, you know, it's going to be incumbent upon each individual player on this team to self-coach and be more disciplined and not fidget on the offensive line and not line up in the neutral zone defensively and not grab and clutch unless, of course, guy's going for a touchdown and you have no choice, you know, but to commit a pass interference or a hold. That's the only way that I would want to see that. If the guy has a sure six, well, then you're going to pull his butt down. I get that. But these guys must be more disciplined because at some point, averaging as they do roughly 8 penalties a game for almost 80 yards in penalties per game, and they're number one in the NFL in both categories or tied for first in both categories, that's not going to win you any style points. In fact, it's going to take points off the scoreboard. And Bill Belichick talked about it over the course of the bye weekend. He's mentioned it again as recently as today. And it's going to be a problem. And he knows it. The players have to know it. It has to be a point of emphasis. Self-discipline. Don't do the things that are going to put you in third and long. When you have a third and two and you have all kinds of options at your disposal, even with a Josh McDaniels offense, and then you jump off sides, or you know legal procedure, you know, and all of a sudden you're at third and seven, and now you know you got to throw the ball, and you're in that kind of nether world where, all right, you know, can we get 7 yards over the middle? Can we? I mean, you know, you've limited your options. You've severely cut back on the options you would have as opposed to being third and two. That's a big play. That's a big call. Those are the ones that are going to come back and haunt the Patriots more than anything else this year. That's where the discipline must come. Now, I'm hopeful that because we're continuing to see improved play from the much maligned offensive line, as we've, you know, ragged on about throughout the course of this year, you know, with improved health, with improved continuity, guys playing together, guys getting used to each other, maybe a somewhat simplified game plan, never, you know, it doesn't matter what it is. I'm hoping that the discipline part of it will also come along for the ride, as we've seen other improvements also come along for the ride. That's kind of where I'm coming from this. That's my major worry. Turning third and one and third and two into third and six or seven or eight. Or 15. Those are going to be the killers. You're taking points off the scoreboard. And especially over the course of the next month, when you're going up against four high-powered, get up and down the field, you know, thread a needle through a haystack kind of, you know, targeting of their offensive weapons from those quarterbacks that you're getting ready to face, you cannot afford to take points off of your side, or defensively, you cannot afford to let those guys have second chances. You got to get them off the field. Self-discipline. Penalties. Number one nitpick for me, number one fear that I have for me in the second half of this season for the New England Patriots. How about you? 855-PATS-500, toll-free telephone number, webradio@patriots.com, our email address at JRBroadcaster, Twitter, John.Rook on Facebook. All right, let me give you a couple of moments to think about all that good stuff to contribute to the program here on Nitpick Tuesday. Eric Friends from Boston.com, who covers the AFC East and the Patriots, he will join us in hour number two of the program coming up a little more than 30 minutes from now. We'll get his thoughts on the bye week. Get his early thoughts on the Indianapolis Colts, where the Patriots will play this next Sunday night on the NBC Sunday night game of the week. So you'll have primetime cameras looking in on the, you know, Tom Brady versus Andrew Luck matchup. Not that we're not used to that around here. A couple of other, you know, note items from around the league as well from this last week, in case you weren't aware. I'd like to make you aware of that. Anything else on your mind? This is the time to do it. We'll jump into a little bit on the Colts today. I would tell you that in a typical game week, that Tuesday is usually pretty much reserved for the nitpicks, even though there was no game to have played this past week with the bye week. We're still going to kind of reserve today for nitpicks, but we'll touch a bit on the Colts, and then we'll jump more into the game planning and looking at the opposition by this time tomorrow. 855-PATS-500. Good time to jump in right now. Web radio at patriots.com, at JR Broadcaster, John.Rook on Facebook. Take a timeout, come right back. In the playbook, patriots.com radio.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go. Go. That's it. Come on. Kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call star NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved, with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or Tri-Corner Hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie. 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
I say 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit Patriots.com/the list to join today.
The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, and much more, including Pro Shop exclusives and sideline gear from Adidas, Nike, and New Era. The Pro Shop is located next to Gillette Stadium and is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop, your team, your store.
Didn't like what you saw from the hometown team last Sunday?
Brady's under center. Counter action. Play fake by Brady. Under rush. Down he goes. Tom with no chance. Sacked by Jerry Hughes. Back at the 23.
Well, John didn't either. Sucky, sucky, sucky. It's Nitpick Tuesday on Patriots Playbook. Phone in your nitpicks on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 855-PATS-500 or email them to webradio@patriots.com. Now back to the nitwit, nitpick master himself, John Rook.
Time to jump into it a little bit here. What's your number one fear for the second half of the season in terms of a big old nitpick that you just haven't seen this team able to shake in their first nine games this season? Mine happens to be the penalties. I've harped on it every week. I'm harping on it again today. I'll continue to harp on it until it's no longer a problem. And my greatest fear is that this will remain a problem, and it could end up costing them points and maybe a very valuable game somewhere on the schedule this month. When you're going up against four high-powered quarterbacks like you're getting ready to face, you're going to need everything and everybody on the same page, firing off all at the same time. It'll take an unmitigated amount of discipline. Jeff writes this in on email. He says, John, number one fear for the rest of the season is still injury. He says, I think Brady, Gronk, Revis, Wilfork, Browner, and Hightower, since we already lost Mayo, cannot go down at this point if we want to have a chance to win. If those players stay healthy, I think they win it all. All right, that's a very confident look forward, Jeff. I would put injury number two behind penalties, because there's really not a lot you can do about injury. I mean, and plus, I would say to this point in time, the Patriots have accounted for themselves with the injuries that they've had fairly well. I mean, they've been able to make up for the biggest injury that seems to have hurt them this year, and that's the absence of Jerod Mayo at middle linebacker. And they seem to have overcome that one, not only by adjusting their own personnel, but by also picking up a couple of extra linebackers in Akeem Ayers and Jonathan Casillas before the trade deadline. And while neither one of those guys are directly replacing him on the field, it is adding to the overall depth. And I think that's something that they can do pretty much everywhere on the field with two notable exceptions. One would be a quarterback. The other one would be a tight end. And I hesitate even on tight end, because as great as Rob Gronkowski has been, he's been an all-world MVP type of performer. Many of you think that he has been the Patriots' MVP over the first half of the New England season. And we talked about that last week here on the show. I still think that if, you know, heaven forbid something happened to him where it took him down and out, that you'd at least have enough of a threat to catch the ball in Tim Wright and to block in Ho'omanawanui, and with James Devlin as well, providing a lot of linebacker/tight end/fullback type of looks back there. You know, you would not have the game-breaking capabilities that you have with Gronk, and you certainly wouldn't have, you know, two people double-teaming him coming out off the line of scrimmage. But I think you could probably still be at least representative. Yes, it would suck to lose him, And I hope that that does not happen. But I think we all realize that injuries just happen. It's a part of the game. And, you know, he hasn't been able to stay healthy at the tail end of either the last couple of seasons. Again, knock on wood, as the saying goes. Brady is an obvious one. You put everything in the lap of Jimmy Garoppolo, then if you have all of the weapons still surrounding him that Tom Brady has right now, I think you've got a fighting chance. But I think that's the one that you probably would, just because of the relative inexperience, and because you know that somebody's going to throw something at him that he hasn't really seen before, that's probably the one that you couldn't overcome the most. Gronk, I think you at least have a shot. Everything else, you got shots at. Defense, you know, in the defensive backfield, defensive line. Linebacker, maybe less so because of the depth already taken hit there with Mayo's injury, but I think you can probably overcome most everything else. So that's why I'll still put penalties up at the top of the list, but injuries would be a close second. So, Jeff, thank you for that. All right, to the telephones. Here's John in Maryland. John, you're in the playbook. How's it going?
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Good, John.
My biggest fear is like what you said, injury. But my nitpick would have to be any lack of a semblance of any kind of run game. Our team thrives on play action.
Yep.
So if we can continue to maintain at least a threat of a good run play, I think we become one-dimensional. And my third thing would be Brady not keeping up with being the dynamic mobile quarterback that he's slowly becoming.
Well, I think it's a great one. I had that listed as one of my nitpicks today in the view from above. They need to make certain that, especially without, you know, their number one running back on the shelf, with Stephen Ridley. And, you know, I think that that's the one, you know, of the two major injuries they've had this year, that's the one they've been able to overcome. Linebacker's been the one they've been able to overcome. Maybe less so Ridley. And I don't mean to denigrate either Jonas Gray or Shane Vereen, but they're two different backs. And this team has, you know, certainly excelled in throwing the football. But you got to at least have the threat of the run in order to sell the play action. I think we all realize that. That's almost a basic football 101 type of thing here. And so if you're able to run the ball, then, yeah, you're going to get those linebackers to be able to bite on a run fake because they've got to respect the run. So I would agree with you. That has to be a concern, along with penalties, along with injuries, but making sure that some semblance of a decent run game does still exist. The Patriots, after 10 weeks, are 10th out of 16 teams in the AFC in rushing offense and 19th out of 32 teams in the NFL in rushing offense. That has to improve. If they could be a, you know, top half rushing team, in other words, you got to be in the top 15 or 16, then I think that that would be at least adequate enough to make the other team at least respect your ability to run the football, and they're not quite there. So there's some work to do.
All right, you mentioned penalties, and I agree with you. We need to clean up the offensive penalties, but as far as the defensive one, if it isn't broke, don't fix it. If it's getting us games, and until we lose a game from penalties on the defensive side, I said just let them play.
Well, then why do you want to keep tempting fate? Because you know it's going to happen. You know it's going to happen, and it's going to happen because even more so, these officials are going to be out looking for it in the second half of the season with so much riding on the line.
The history of the past 2 years shows they loosen the call the closer we get to play.
I hope you're right. But, again, I'm not sure that's going to be the case this year because of the point of emphasis on the pass interference and the defensive holding. I'm not sure that's going to be the case. I don't know that they'll revert back to the old ways. If they do, well, then maybe the Patriots will just, you know, hit people in the mouth and be done with it, and they'll end up being one of the most penalized teams in the NFL and end up back in the Super Bowl. And, of course, if they're in the Super Bowl, well, then nobody's going to pay any attention to this, and hey, it's all good. But then I guarantee you in the offseason that'll get taken a look at because, you know, they're going to say, well, geez, the last three Super Bowl potential, you know, champion teams have been three of the most penalized teams in the league. What kind of a message is that sending?
Well, I think we kind of saw that this year with what after the last Super Bowl and the emphasis, the renewed emphasis on all these interference calls. But again, it was real hard and heavy, and they've become lax again. They're letting it. If anything, the officials are inconsistent in what they're calling. But again, it's not being called as frequently as it used to be.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I guess it could, I certainly, John, would buy the fact that it could go either way. But I'm just, you know, these are things that you can control. As I pointed out earlier, these types of penalties that seem to be, you know, hitting the Patriots, they're things that the players themselves can control. It isn't up to coaching to correct this problem. This is up to the individual, you know, discipline of the players involved here to correct these errors. They can do it if they need to and if they feel like they want to. And I don't want to get to the point where, you know, a call is going to go against the Patriots and cost them a ball game. But that's what we're cruising down to when you have four teams as eminently capable as the next four that they're going to face on the schedule. That's my, that's my point entirely.
I agree that, yeah, it has, it should be cleaned up, but I'm not to the detriment of our defense is so afraid or so reluctant to make any penalties that we're not as good as we are right now. And I think we can get better, clean it up. Yeah, we'll get a little bit better. But I think we're finding our own, even on the defensive side, even this late into the season. I think our secondary is really starting to gel even more. Patrick Chung's come on as a safety and actually contributing better than he ever has. And Browner, surprisingly, is doing a very good job. But he's about the only guy I see that really needs to clean up this penalty situation. Everybody else seems to be doing fine.
Yeah. Well, so far, so good. Browner, I would say, would be one of those. Revis certainly still needs to watch it because, you know, he's going to get a lot of attention. He's got some elite receivers that he's getting ready to go up against. T.Y. Hilton is going to be a handful this Sunday night. And if anybody thinks otherwise, you don't know what you're talking about. I think this guy is one of the most dynamic playmakers in the entire NFL right now. T.Y. Hilton, and I'd be stunned if Revis didn't, you know, have to match up with him the entire night. And that may be the difference in the ball game right there, because I definitely think the Patriots be able to move on the Colts. But, you know, Hilton's the one that scares the, you know what out of me as far as this next Sunday's concerned. So big test coming up right out of the gate.
I agree with you. You don't think that Andrew Luck will be a little hesitant to throw it that way if Revis is on him?
No, I don't, because I frankly believe that Andrew Luck is cocky enough to think that, you know, hey, that's my number one guy. If I see him open for a split second, I still got to go to him. You know, I don't think they're going to, you know, respect Revis to the point where he's going to get on that island with Hilton again. I think what they'll do is they'll definitely challenge him. I think they've got to. You know, the interesting point here won't be so much how many catches Hilton has, it's how many targets that they have for him. How many chances do they, how many times do they throw his way? And, you know, if they target him early and often, which I firmly expect that they will do, then that's going to put the Patriots on their heels somewhat. So, you know, there's a big challenge right there, especially in what you're going to do with your safeties and whether or not he's going to need, you know, help over the top.
I can't wait to see how Belichick decides to take away T.Y. Hilton, which he's known to do with other elite receiver.
Yep, I'm agreeing with you. I think that that's going to be, you know, some of the interesting game planning, undoubtedly, that they'll be working on this week that we'll see unfold on Sunday.
Okay. Well, Ross, that's all I got. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, John. Appreciate that. John in Maryland. 855-PATS-500, toll-free telephone number. How about this? Just, I kind of noticed this just by glancing at the stats, but you have the number one offense. The number one offense in the NFL that you're going up against this week in the Indianapolis Colts. Number one, right? Number one passing offense, number one offense, period, overall. As far as defense is concerned, the Patriots, as you know, for a while were the number one ranked pass defense, but because of the yardage that was put up on them the last couple of weeks, they have dropped all the way down to 14th in pass defense, 16th in total defense. So that's right in the middle of the pack of the 32 teams in the NFL. But not only do you face the number one offense and number one passing offense this week in the Colts, next week, the following week, you get the number one defense in the NFL right now in the Detroit Lions. How about that? Number one, this week you go against the number one offense. Next week you go up against the number one defense. Now, I got to tell you, on paper, I don't know too many teams that have to do that. That can be formidable. And talk about having different game plans. Yeah, I definitely think that would be part of the case. Now, you may or may not envision Detroit as having a number one caliber defense, and I can understand why, because I'm not so sure how many people really believe in the Lions, although they did come, you know, last second win again this week, and they have struggled a bit on offense, but you know, that defense has certainly been top caliber. It's why we were talking about Ndamukong Suh as far as a wish list were concerned before the trading deadline, you know, about this time a month ago. Looks like they've more than held up their end of the deal here. But that just, this is going to tax the Patriots' flexibility, adaptability is really probably the more appropriate word to look at here. The Patriots' ability to game plan, I mean, I just now noticed that, you know, you got the number one offense this week in the Colts, number one defense next week in the Lions. That ought to be quite the challenge. Edwin says on Facebook, he says, good afternoon, John. My nitpick Tuesday is New England's league-leading penalties. Now, he sends a graphic of the page here that he pulled that down from. And as I quoted a little bit earlier, the instance is New England actually is number two in overall penalties called. Pittsburgh has 83 flags accepted. The Patriots and the Broncos have 79 penalties accepted against them this year. So it's tied for number two in overall flags. But in terms of average penalties per game, because the Steelers have a game in hand here still, then the Patriots and the Broncos are tied at 8.78 penalties per game, and the Patriots have a slight lead over, actually, number two, St. Louis, in penalty yards per game at 77.67 yards per game. And that was actually going into this week's play, going into week 10. So the number doesn't move for New England at all, while it might have moved slightly for, you know, Denver, Pittsburgh, and the St. Louis Cardinals, or St. Louis Rams, rather. But slipped. Freudian slip again. That's something that just flat out has to get better. Just has to get better. Ben sends this on Facebook. He says, my nitpick, bye week, no football. True, but you have to almost try to entertain yourself with the other games. Like, for instance, I watched a little bit of the Dallas-Jacksonville game from London, which was kind of silly, really, and I'll talk about that maybe in a little bit. I watched a little of the both the Bills and the Dolphins play. Both of them kind of coughed it up at the end like a cat coughs up a hairball. Can't say that I was completely surprised. Really can't even say that I was disappointed, but, you know, because it does give the Patriots a two-game lead now in the AFC East. But nevertheless, you know, I try to catch up on some of the other teams that I haven't spent as much time following and watching. But I understand what your point is. He says, crazy week of games. Glad we didn't have to be a part of it all. Says he's a Navy vet here. Well, thank you for your service, Ben. Appreciate that. My dad was Army, two cousins Army, Mark Jefferson and Jamal Cole. One cousin Navy, Marissa Lowe. Love a shout-out. I'll have them listen to the replay. Well, there you go. You got your shout-out in. Thank you, Benjamin. Thank you very, very much for your service. I hope you enjoy your Memorial Day. Your Veterans Day, excuse me. And thank you for your service. Chris says, John, one of the key parts to our game is to control the clock. We need to be able to drive the ball down the field with play action more often. Do you think that Jonas Gray will be the guy to replace Ridley? Vereen has dropped the ball a few times, which removes the threat of him swinging out of the backfield and catching the ball. It's a good question, Chris. I actually think they're okay with Jonas Gray. When they made the move to bring him in and physically replace Stephen Ridley with him rather than necessarily move Shane Vereen up, it tells me a couple of things. Number one, they feel like Gray is more of a Ridley type of runner, that he can hit the hole fast enough, and I think that's what you really need in this day and age of quicker defenses and holes and gaps and creases in the line closing rapidly with the extra speed and quickness ability that a lot of defenders have. You got to have the ability to hit the hole. And I really think, I know that this was a PFW mailbag thing this week, but you know, Paul and I were talking about this even a week or two ago, as to why James White, the rookie from Wisconsin, why he hasn't had a quote-unquote opportunity. Well, first of all, that's really sort of a misnomer. He's had an opportunity. He gets an opportunity, and it happens every week in practice. The guys that play and the guys that are active are the ones that excel in practice, generally speaking. And I'm not sure that his strong suit is hitting the hole as quickly as he needs to in order to be effective. And that's the one thing that Jonas Gray does do very well. Now, say what you want. I mean, Gray's built low to the ground. He's got good toughness. He can definitely drive for a couple extra yards after contact. So I think he's got that ability. He doesn't have that, what I like to call, miss ability that a guy like Stephen Ridley has. But at least you know what you're going to get with Jonas. And I just think there's a doubt as to whether or not White can hit the hole quick enough. And that's really the big deal. They like Shane Vereen in his role. Third down, change of pace back. Doesn't mean that they won't give him the ball on a running opportunity, but they like the fact that he's got versatility where he can catch it on a swing out of the backfield, or he can line up wide on one end. You know, he's got the wheel routes coming out. He's got a lot of different things that are going on here that teams have to respect because he's had success. Rather than pigeonhole him to, you know, a single back, tailback slot, which he might not be particularly adept at without somebody blocking directly in front of him like a fullback in an I formation or an offset I or whatever you have, his forte is, you know, movement. So let's get him in open space where he can utilize that quickness to his best benefit and to the team's best benefit. Don't pigeonhole him where he might not be as good. Play him where you know he's going to have some chance to be successful. So that's why I think they've opted for Gray in this particular instance over Ridley. Not Gray over Ridley, but Gray in place of Ridley over Vereen. And that doesn't mean they don't think Shane Vereen can't play. They still like Shane Vereen. I do too. And I think the two of them together should be able at least to make up for what you would lose, you know, with Stephen Ridley's absence with his knee injury. But, yeah, that's actually, I think that's a pretty good question there, Chris. And, that actually is a that's actually pretty much the key, I think, to a lot of the success that the Patriots will or won't have in the second half of the season. Randy says, I have three nitpicks on things to haunt the Pats in the future. One, penalties. It's not really how many, because that goes along with being a physical defense, but it is when they happen. In the last game, Browner and Collins both received unnecessary penalties that led to a Denver touchdown. It's also a good point. I'll buy that to an extent. Number two, Timms. I'm not liking that he had not been groomed much more after the Buffalo game. I'm nitpicking because there were two passes in the Denver game that would have been perfect for Timms. You're talking about those two deep passes to LaFell, right, that Brady just missed on. In that particular instance, you really are nitpicking here. I don't have a problem with it. I'd rather have LaFell in there than Timms, and that's not saying that I don't like Timms. He's still got to learn. He's still got to learn the ropes. He's still got to, do a lot of different things in order to be, you know, a number one caliber type of receiver. And I don't have any problem with the team trying to stretch the field. I mean, they almost connected on both of those, as you know. I thought those were actually well-timed, well-placed misses, if you can even have such a thing. Certainly showed the Broncos that the Patriots were not afraid to go over the top and that maybe they need to think about, you know, someone helping out. Because if you have to commit someone to that, that's going to leave somebody else open underneath. Number three, he says complacency. In the past two games, the team has become complacent after an awesome second quarter. But the passion and play calling seems to fall. I'd like to see them play more full 60-minute games, even if it means embarrassing the other team. Interesting point, Randy. Interesting point. I think like a lot of people, we'd like to see them keep the pedal to the metal. You know, and when you get a team down, step on the jugular, and, you know, we're going to go through all of the usual, cliche terms here. But there is something to that, because it does, if you keep your blinders on, and to me, the old football adage is just pretend it's nothing on the scoreboard. Play as if it's a 0-0 game. In other words, keep the blinders on. Don't look around you. Don't look behind you. Look ahead of you at all times. And that's what this team needs to do. And part of that is discipline. So to me, complacency almost goes hand in hand with the penalties as far as nitpicky things to talk about, because this is all about self-discipline as an individual player on the field. And you want to make sure that if you have a great second quarter, and of course the Patriots have scored, what, 8 times in the final 2 minutes of the first half out of their 9 games thus far, which is an amazing statistic. And, the next best thing would be to score, follow that up with a score on the opening drive of the second half, because then you really got teams, you got teams backpedaling, seriously. So if you can do whatever you can to keep from becoming complacent and keep that pedal to the metal attitude, I would agree with that. And, you know, that means continuing to try to push the envelope and go over the top and throw the football and not worry about the scoreboard. And then, you know, once you have a, 45-14 lead, then maybe you let, Jimmy G and some others come into the ballgame and take over. You'd like to be in that position. I don't know that we're going to see that much, if at all, over the next month of the regular season. But I understand your point. It's an interesting one because, we've actually come up to that over the last couple of weeks a bit, somewhat surprisingly, of course, against Denver. And if it should happen again in the near future, it'd be interesting to see how they particularly handle it. Justin is in Virginia. Welcome into the playbook, Justin. How goes it?
What's going on, John? And my nitpick for the this is on defense. I'm not convinced that the run defense is perfect yet. I don't think we had one good game against the Broncos. I think it's a little overblown how we supposedly shut down Ronnie Hillman. And I think coming up with these two games, Andrew Luck's a guy that can run you out. You need consistent pass rush against them. Mm-hmm. And Aaron Rodgers is a guy I'm really afraid of going down the road. He's a guy that, when it comes down to mobile quarterbacks, he's the best in the league, and I think he's the best overall quarterback in the league.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so explain your thinking again.
I think our run defense needs to get better, and I think our pass rush needs to be more consistent. I know we had a good game against the Broncos, but I need to see it more consistently. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, okay. I understand what you're saying. What I would like to see, and I think a lot of times because you've lost your edge rusher, the one that you have in Chandler Jones, I think the Patriots could actually, and I'm really going to get nitpicky here, I think they could do a better job of collapsing the pocket and rushing from the middle. What I'd like to see is a more adept attempt at Wilfork or Walker, or if Salinga, when Salinga comes back in a couple of weeks, of trying to collapse the pocket from the middle, flush the quarterback out, and hopefully into the waiting arms of someone like a Rob Ninkovich or an Akeem Ayers, or perhaps on down the line of Chandler Jones again. That's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see it come from almost an inside-out perspective.
Yeah, same here, John. Thank you.
All right, you got it. Appreciate it, Justin. Thank you. That's good stuff all the way around. Good little nitpicks. Again, we're being really crazy with a lot of these today, but frankly, when you're 7-2 and you're back up on top of all of the power rankings, it seems like in the NFL of late, based on your last couple of weeks of play, it's just not a lot to get really, picky over. But I think you've seen, that even though this team has won 5 games in a row, that there's still very little margin for error. I'm not trying to, sound the alarm and be Chicken Little with the sky falling or anything like that. This simply is a fact of just being a byproduct of this season. This team struggled to start. This team still has some problems on occasion. This team's nitpicks, their problem areas are still very much, I think, identifiable by a lot of us. Excuse me. And there are things clearly that can be cleaned up to make this team a better team. And you're getting ready to bite off your biggest chunk of the season over the next month. This doesn't seem to bother many of you as much as I thought it might. At Indianapolis, home against Detroit, at Green Bay, at San Diego. All four teams still very much in a playoff hunt. Three of them potential division champions. And even though Green Bay and Detroit are in the same division. But three of them potential championship teams. Nobody seems to be bothered by this. I'm sensing another nitpick here. I'm sensing complacency on your part. Nobody else is feeling this? 855-PATS-500, toll-free, web radio at patriots.com, at JR Broadcaster Twitter, John.Rook on Facebook. We'll get a timeout, got more emails to get to, get to a couple of phone calls. Eric Friends from Boston.com joining us in the playbook coming up.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it in hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call star NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or Tri-Corner Hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
I say 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game.
Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit Patriots.com/the list to join today.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, and much more, including Pro Shop exclusives and sideline gear from Adidas, Nike, and New Era. The Pro Shop is located next to Gillette Stadium and is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop, your team, your store.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Can't get enough Patriots Playbook? Find the show in the audio on demand section of Patriots.com. Catch up on live episodes you missed or simply replay your favorite Playbook moments from years past. Get inside the Patriots Playbook with John Rook whenever, wherever. Only on Patriots.com and the official Patriots apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad.
Hour number two inside the Playbook for a Tuesday and a Nitpick Tuesday here on Patriots.com radio. Where is everybody today? Slow day today. Maybe it's just a byproduct of coming off the bye week. I'm just kind of curious. Normally it's been a lot busier than this, so I sense there's some complacency. I sense there's some people who are kind of like, all right, I don't care. We're 7-2. We're at the top of the league again. We're going to win it all. You know, that's what I sense. I don't think you could be more wrong in this instance. Patriots were back at practice today, in case you missed it. After taking some time off, 4 days, in fact, to be exact, during the bye week break. Brandon LaFell and Dominic Easley were not spotted at practice today, along with Chandler Jones, but he's been out because of the hip injury. We are unsure as to why LaFell was not there. It perhaps could have been a team excuse thing, but we don't know because the Patriots won't be required to fill out an injury report, practice report, until tomorrow. So we don't expect to really know. We may not even know tomorrow, but we don't know yet today why LaFell missed practice. Easley was at practice last week before the guys took their four-day break, but he did spend some time with the trainers before he walked off the practice field. So it's possible, and again, I know that some have already surmised this in the local media here in New England, it's possible he may have suffered another injury type of setback that kept him off the practice field today. But again, until the Patriots can file a practice report, as is the rule, the National Football League asked them to do following Wednesday's practice, we won't know until this time tomorrow, roughly. So that's the latest, at least from practice today, is the guys were practicing out on the practice fields here at Gillette a short while ago, and they've just now finished up their locker room session about 15, 20 minutes ago down the hallway here as well with members of the media. Now, in the interesting news department, I don't know if you heard this or not. You might have seen this in your travels around the internet or, you know, through the Twitter sphere as well. But, you know, since the Patriots have just finished up with the Denver Broncos a week ago, the Broncos have also been kind of shuffling their offensive line, much like the Patriots were doing earlier in the year to, you know, find the right sort of combo, if you will. And the Broncos also needed to jumpstart their running game, and for an obvious reason. More on that again coming up a little bit. But they have apparently been talking with Richie Incognito. This was originally reported by NFL Media's Jeff Darlington, and that Richie Incognito was in Denver for a workout earlier today. Yep, in Denver for a workout. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean, and as I understand here, now I'm getting it tweeted that Fox Sports' Jay Glazer was the first one to have that. That's fine. We'll give credit where credit's due. Thank you for that. Darlington did add in his report, however, that a signing is not imminent, but that they are kicking the tires on a potential deal. And of course, Incognito's name came up in a lot of discussions around these parts about 6 weeks ago when the Patriots were really struggling with their combination within the offensive line. And I think almost to a person, I don't think we had two. I know that amongst the media and amongst, you know, ourselves here in our own studio, the PFW guys especially included, no one here thought inviting Richie Incognito into this situation was a good idea. No one. Now, had they lost potentially another player to injury, then that might have been a consideration. I will allow for that. Because you're talking about a guy, even if he's been, you know, a bully or a bad guy or whatever in the past in some locker rooms, you're still talking about a guy that, you know, has been able to play at a high level in his past. He has not played since the bullying scandal with his former teammate Jonathan Martin a year ago in Miami. Was cleared to play again after that incident, but has not signed. He's been persona non grata. No one's even wanted to deal with him. And this is the first time, at least that we've heard, that he's even had a meeting with somebody and a workout with somebody to potentially play for them. So just thought it was interesting. That's coming with Denver. Apparently, Incognito did have a visit with Tampa in the offseason, but that was quickly, waylaid when the Tampa Bay Bucks traded with the Patriots to get Logan Mankins. All right, so that's interesting. Because the Broncos still have a need at running back. You know, they're talking about opening holes for the running backs. Right now, they don't have any running backs. Ronnie Hillman, who has had some good games this year, has their only two 100-yard rushing games for the Broncos this year, although he didn't play particularly well against the Patriots. But he sprained his foot, left foot, I believe it was, in Denver's win over Oakland this past weekend. He's going to be out apparently 2 to 3 weeks. 2 to 3 weeks is the prognosis for Ronnie Hillman, which means now it's C.J. Anderson, who's the third man in. Monte Ball was the team's number one back, injured his groin back in early October against Arizona. He is apparently, I guess, right now potentially able to come back, but I think he's day-to-day. They're officially, I guess, going to announce Hillman as day-to-day as well. But if Ball is back, then maybe that also helps Denver's situation in the running back court. All right, so a couple of things I think to look at, anyway, concerning the Patriots and competition that they have within the AFC. All right, overall, on Tuesdays, we managed to check in and get some of the temperature from Eric Friends, who covers the AFC East and the Patriots for Boston.com, and he joined us now here in the playbook. Eric, how did you whittle away the hours during the bye week?
Well, actually, I went up to Maine to visit my family, and I found myself wishing that the bye week lasted a little bit longer. So, unfortunately, I had to get back to work, but fortunately for me, my job isn't terribly difficult or terribly painful to go to. So that's been good.
Yeah, that is always a good benefit of coming off the bye week. While you miss the extra time in the middle of the season, you're always kind of anxious to get back at it because it does have its exciting moments, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And, yeah, the season only comes once a year. So I look at it like, you know, grind as much as you can while you can, and then take the time off when you get it, because, you know, you'll be waiting for football season again, but you'll at least get to recharge the battery.
Very, very true. All right, so what is your biggest nitpick overall with this team through the first half? And then I would follow that up already here with what's your biggest worry, potential nitpick for the second half?
Well, I think the two are kind of tied hand in hand, because I look at the Patriots over the past few seasons and what the main problem has been for why this team can't get back to the Super Bowl, can't get over that hump. And I think the biggest problem for them has been their lack of a running game that can really pound the ball when defenses are expecting them to run it. And you know, they didn't have terrible success doing that in the first half of the season. And obviously losing Stephen Ridley to injury did not help that situation whatsoever. But definitely I would say that's a concern of mine that carries over into the second half of the season. Obviously, the offense has been just fine recently without the running game. I mean, Tom Brady's been lighting up the scoreboard once again, but I do look at the fact that they'll eventually need to run the ball when the weather starts to get much colder and when the snow starts to fall, and that's going to be something they're going to have to lean on, and I'm not sure they can do that right now.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that was amongst my list of nitpicks. I really am concerned where they're cleaning up the penalties, and some people are already telling me that may be a little overblown because, you know, the contending teams seem to be the most penalized teams around the league this year. Why do you think that might be?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, part of it is obviously the defensive illegal contact, holding penalties that have been called. Brandon Browner, I think, has 7 of them in the past 4 games, which is kind of ridiculous, but definitely I think that's part of it. But you look at the Seattle Seahawks last season, I believe they were the most penalized team in the league, and they won the Super Bowl. So I don't know that being overly penalized is something that's going to hold you back from winning that Super Bowl. It's just a matter of, you know, overcoming those penalties, which the Patriots have done very well, particularly on offense, where, you know, they seem to have a first down or second down penalty on every drive, and then Tom Brady bails him out with a 3rd and long completion to Rob Gronkowski or Julian Edelman or any number of guys, and it seems like the penalty never happened. But definitely something to watch going forward.
Well, here's my whole problem with that. I don't like playing with fire, Scarecrow. I'm afraid one of these is going to burn me, and I think in this particular instance, and my entire point of penalties being at the top of my nitpick list for the second half of the season today has been with the 4 teams that you're getting ready to face. Your margin for error is going to be that much less because these are 4 playoff quality held. 3 of them are, you know, challenging for first place in their respective divisions, you know, over the course of the next week. So this is clearly, right now, the toughest stretch that New England is going to face this entire season. Your margin for error and your margin for overcoming your own errors will be that much less.
That's a good point. But I do look at the fact, you know, they had some pretty painful penalties over the past couple of weeks. Brandon Browner had that pass interference in the end zone. That was a debatable one. On, I believe it was Demaryius Thomas against the Broncos, and obviously, you know, that helped the Broncos get an early score, but definitely wasn't something that killed them in that game. So they've proven they can overcome it. Like you said, you know, the problem is you face these tougher teams who can capitalize on mistakes. Going to be a problem.
Yeah, it's going to be. I also like your selection of the running game, because as the weather does get colder, things seem to slow down. Teams seem to pack it in just a little bit more. It doesn't mean the Patriots won't go long or won't emphasize the pass game or any of that stuff, but I think we all know you have to be able to run the football somewhat effectively as the weather gets colder. Number two, it's painfully obvious, and not so much painful, but it's very, very obvious that play action really is what sets up Tom Brady for being at his very, very best and being, as we like to call it, Brady-like. And unless you have the threat, unless you're getting linebackers to freeze momentarily or bite on that fake, then your linebackers are going to be that much closer to being able to take something away from a Rob Gronkowski or Julian Edelman over the middle.
Yeah, and this season Brady's relied particularly heavily on the play action. I think he's somewhere in the top 10 in terms of play action percentage of his pass attempts. So I look at the running game as really the one huge key for me on offense. Defensively, I would say my biggest concern, my biggest nitpick would be the pass rush, and I think that's something that has a chance of improving, because J. Chandler Jones coming back from an injury. Steelfer Salenga will also come back from an injury. But, I mean, Dominique Easley being lost right now, we don't know what exactly his status is, but he got injured last week at practice.
Mm-hmm.
He was not out there this week at practice. So who knows what his status is, but the fact that they're losing key pass rushers, it seems, left and right, does not bode well right now, and especially going up against, like you mentioned, some very good offenses in, you know, you have the Colts this week, but you have the Chargers coming up, you have, I believe, the Packers are coming up, the Lions are coming up, so
yep.
They're all teams that like to throw the ball. They're going to have to be able to get after the quarterback. They really haven't done a very good job of it overall this season. They've gotten it in fits and spurts, but consistently it hasn't been there, so I'd like to see some more consistent people in the pass rush. I think that's my biggest defensive pick.
I think it's a good one to look at right now, especially in light of the fact, as you mentioned, of Dominique Easley's apparent injury, and we won't know more on that until about this time tomorrow when the first injury report of the week or practice report of the week does come out. Eric Frenz, Boston.com, joining us here. I just looked at the numbers somewhat offhandedly maybe about 2 hours ago, and while the Patriots are facing the number one offense in the league, in Indianapolis this Sunday, the next week after that, they face the number one defense in Detroit. That doesn't happen all too often in back-to-back weeks.
No, I'm guessing it doesn't. And that's definitely going to be a test for them on both sides of the ball. I think, they're obviously focused right now on Andrew Luck and what he brings to the table. I think that's a group that is really going to be tough because, I mean, the Patriots have a great and deep secondary. I just wonder how they're going to match up because, I mean, I feel like Revis is probably going to take T.Y. Hilton, and then from there, it's anybody's guess.
Yeah.
Brandon Browner could be on Dwayne Allen. He could be on Reggie Wayne mm-hmm. at times. But when Reggie Wayne moves, I mean, if they're going to play a matchup game in terms of man coverage, Reggie Wayne moves around a bit. I mean, T.Y. Hilton is known as a slot guy, but Reggie Wayne and T.Y. Hilton have pretty much shared the load in the slot, so... whoever covers Reggie Wayne is going to have to be able to man the slot, and I'm not sure Brandon Browner is ready for that. I mean, he did a relatively good job at linebacker last week against the Broncos,
right,
moving around a bit. And I think that was a good performance for him. Bodes well, but I think it's going to be it's a tough matchup. Anytime you ask a really tall and lanky corner to go up against a really short and shifty receiver like T.Y. Hilton, so. It's going to be interesting. They could use any number of guys. I mean, Kyle Arrington might have that matchup. He had a little bit of that matchup last time around. They could have Malcolm Butler in that situation. It's going to be an interesting one to watch how the Patriots try and match up.
I frankly expect, at least Malcolm Butler, I expect him to probably get the first crack of that based on his, performance over the last couple of weeks. I'm not sure I would agree that I think that Browner seems a little miscast in that particular role against Wayne. I also think that may be the one matchup that the Colts might be able to really exploit. And that's with all due respect to T.Y. Hilton, but I'm saying right now that, I'm kind of taking for granted that Revis neutralizes him. I don't think he'll be able to entirely because he hasn't been able to completely neutralize really anybody with the exception of, the kid from Buffalo. But other than that, I think Hilton has to have some respect here, which means that it may very well be that the Colts end up targeting someone else a little more often.
They will, and I think that, you saw that against the Broncos as well. Malcolm Butler had a pretty big bullseye on his back, and, for all the talk about how well Butler did, I mean, he was okay, and I mean, if you can't expect much more than okay up against Peyton Manning, but I think Manning went 5 for 9 in his direction. Butler had a couple of pass breakups, so it wasn't a bad performance by any stretch, and especially against the quarterback of Manning's caliber. But those targets are certainly going to be there, and Malcolm Butler's not going to win every single matchup, so it's going to be interesting to see how the Colts attack him and whether the Patriots try to adjust to that or not.
Eric Singh, as you also follow the other teams within the division, how surprised were you that both the Dolphins and Bills took a step back to fall 2 games back in the standings this week?
I was actually very, really surprised. I mean, I had picked both teams to win those games.
Mm-hmm.
As much as, the Dolphins had a tough matchup against the Lions, I thought they had to make up to pull off the upset there, and they were close. The Lions, took a late touchdown to put the game in the Lions' favor, but certainly, I think the Bills really gave one up there. I mean, they had a good-sized lead, a 7-point lead on the Chiefs had a chance to go up by two touchdowns and just fumbled into, Bryce Brown fumbled into the end zone, and then it just snowballed from there. You got to win those games at home, and especially when you have an opportunity like that. I think the Bills really let one slip away there, and hopefully for their sake, it doesn't come back to bite them. But I think both these teams are still very much in the hunt for the wild card spot. They were both teams I thought were hanging by a thread in terms of their ability to contend for the AFC East. I would say that is pretty much out of the question at this point. And I look at the the Thursday night game coming up in a couple of days here between those two teams, and could definitely be a game that swings the AFC wildcard picture one way or the other.
I agree with that, which is why I wanted to kind of jump into it, because I know we'll be emphasizing that a little bit more before this week is over, since these two teams will be, as you suggested, in basically almost an elimination game this Thursday night. So it's kind of cool to even be talking about playoffs at this early juncture. And then I know that you had to be as surprised as everybody else was with the Jets and the way that they were able to shut down Pittsburgh, especially in light of the fact that, Ben Roethlisberger had 12 touchdown passes the last 2 weeks. And I love this number. The Jets had 12 touchdown passes in the last 15 games prior to this past Sunday. That was an amazing performance. And Michael Vick was the one that got it done with his feet still.
Yep, and it was surprising to me because, I think, I was on board with everybody else. I thought Roethlisberger was going to go off against the Jets. And their secondary has just been putrid this season. And, obviously they've been ravaged by injuries. They lost Dee Milliner to a season-ending injury. I think, there was the guy, Dexter McDougal, that they had drafted, who they had high hopes for. He's been done for, I think he just didn't even play at all this season. And then they had, I believe it was Dimitri Patterson, who went AWOL at one point. So that secondary has just been a mess, no matter how you slice it. And I was always surprised to see them get it done like they did, and especially having done it with Michael Vick. I mean, as much as Geno Smith has been awful this season and doesn't deserve to play, I was not expecting Michael Vick to come in and light it up. I didn't think he was going to really be a significant upgrade over Geno Smith just based on what we had seen from Vick, over the past couple of seasons and in his final seasons with the Philadelphia Eagles. I thought those were, he would start to take some significant steps back. I didn't think he was really a starting caliber quarterback anymore. And I don't think he proved me wrong with one performance, but I think he took a big step in saying, look, his career isn't quite over yet.
Absolutely. All right, Eric, before we let you go then, early thought then on the Colt game for Sunday night. Where do you think this one could break down as far as the Patriots' chances for having success on the road?
I think they get it done. I know that Vegas at one point had them as the underdog by 2.5 points.
Mm-hmm.
The line has shifted. I'm not sure if they're still underdogs, but I do believe that the line has shifted a bit. So I think the Patriots, I just think that the week of rest, and obviously the Colts also have the week of rest, so really that's kind of a wash. But Belichick always does so well with an extra week to prepare, and they really needed it with all the injuries. I don't think they're really getting anybody back this week, but certainly a lot of guys licking some wounds. I think they come back off a week, and they have fresh legs. I think they should be all right to go in there and pick up a 31-24 win, I think.
All right. Well, in light of what your prediction is, then I guess you probably don't want to hear me say the Patriots have lost two of the last three times they've come off the bye week.
Oh, interesting stat. And that's, you look at the circumstances of that last game, and obviously you kind of, that throws a little wrench into the stat, but clearly, Gronkowski being interfered with in the end zone and the controversy that all caused. But certainly, Belichick, the losses are going to be wearing off in terms of his after a bye week, but I don't know. I feel like the coaching staff, they've proved it, against when they turned around off the Jets game in 10 days, really blew the doors off the Bears that following game. I think they still have their mojo when it comes to having extra time to repair.
They'll have to hope that is exactly the case. Eric, as always, great to visit with you, buddy. Thank you.
Hi, thanks a lot. Good
luck, Steve. You bet. We'll talk to you soon. Eric Friends, again, covers the AFC East and the Patriots for Boston.com, joining us here in the Playbook on Tuesdays. Hashtag Nitpick Tuesday, as he does every week. All right, back to the phones. Noel in Denver. Thanks for hanging on, Noel. You're in the Playbook.
Hey, John. How you doing?
I'm good, pal. How are you today?
I'll be in a vet. Happy Veterans Day to everyone. And it's 18 degrees here in Denver today. Too bad Peyton can't play.
Atta baby. And again, as we did at the opening of the program today, I second your good wishes to our veterans and families who support veterans all over the country.
Thank you so much. Hey, I have my biggest nitpick. I'm with you on the penalty aspect, but I've kind of got mixed emotions there because I'm really happy to see us hitting hard like we did against Denver. And the question I have for you is I picked the Patriots to win that game 38-28. I've watched Belichick is like his preseason is the first four games of the season every year, it seems like. And I think he's coming together with his team. But I would like to ask you, because you see a lot more than I do there, is that on the play action passes, can you disguise that with a good offensive line?
You can disguise almost anything with a good offensive line. If you have, you know, big bookend tackles, which the Patriots do, if you have, you know, guys that hold their blocks, and you have size, don't allow a lot of penetration, and then if you got a quarterback who's particularly adept at handling the football, I think you can accomplish a lot of sleight of hand that you're going to freeze, you know, a linebacker or a defensive back for a second, a half a second even, to where, you know, the receiver is going to be able to either make a cut or get a half a step on him. And that is all the difference that you need in order to potentially have a real successful play. So I definitely think an offensive line can play into that.
Is it or is it not what we really did against Denver? Because Denver's so good against the run to begin with.
I think that's part of it. I mean, I think they did a pretty good job of it, you know, obviously keeping Denver out of the offensive backfield, because that was a worry of mine, you know, with, you know, guys like Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware, who are so adept at getting after the quarterback. I, you know, for Brady only get sacked once, I thought it was next to phenomenal, because you could make an argument that Denver has, you know, one of the best pass rushing, you know, front fours in the entire league. And they may still. So, you know, I think that a lot of that is due to Brady's savvy. And one of the things I think that Brady has done this year in order to improve his own, you know, outlook and his own performance thus far, because he did struggle, inarguably, he struggled in the opening month of the season, was he's learned to slide up in the pocket a little bit more, and he's improved his footwork to the point where he'll slide to the pocket. In other words, he'll sometimes roll with the pocket out to the side, particularly to the right, his throwing hand, and he's not really a rollout kind of quarterback, but we've seen him do that from time to time this year because the pocket has kind of taken him that way, and so he's taken advantage of that. He's recognized that I need to do this to survive, and so he's worked on that in practice and in drills to make sure that his footwork is up to speed to where it's not awkward for him to be able to throw the football on the run.
Yeah, absolutely, no question. And he's always been good in the pocket, but that moving around has helped tremendously. One last question. I listened to your answer on the radio here.
All right.
Even though I'm driving, I'll get it on pretty quick. But anyway, what do you feel is our – what do we have to shut down in Indianapolis other than T.Y. Hilton this week to win this ballgame?
And thanks, Noel. I appreciate the phone call today, and thank you for listening, as you always do. I would say, you know, Hilton has got to be the number one concern, at least initially, and I know we'll probably dig into this a little bit more tomorrow and Thursday, but to me, right off the top, I said this earlier in the program today, he's one of the most dynamic receivers. Playmaking receivers in the NFL. I think this kid is, I don't know why he doesn't get more run as, you know, being one of the best in the game. He has a knack for the football. So beyond him, my main concern is old friend Reggie Wayne,
old friend Wedgie Wayne?
Wedgie Wayne.
Wascally Wabbit.
Wascally Wabbit. Thank you. I was just about to say, where's our friend? Reggie Wayne is the guy that concerns me the most because I really think that he's the guy that Andrew Luck will target. If he lines up in the slot, then who is going to be the defensive back getting Reggie Wayne? And Eric Friends just touched on that a little bit. I think that could be a key matchup potentially for the Colts to exploit. And that one worries me every bit as much, if not a little bit more so, than T.Y. Hilton right now because of who the Patriots may end up going with against Wayne. You know, I doubt, like Eric Friend said, I kind of doubt it would be Browner. It could be. I doubt it. I'm not sure that's the physical matchup that they want there. So do they go with a slot, back? Do they go with a nickel a nickel back? I mean, what do they do? There are several different things they could do. And I don't even know that that hasn't been, you know, discussed already. Sure, it's been discussed, but I don't know if it's been implemented yet by this team because, you know, they just started practice again today after coming back from a 4-day break. So, yesterday. Today's Tuesday, right? Yeah, it's Tuesday. They did practice yesterday. That may very well be the case that Reggie Wayne is the guy that could have himself in line for a particular strong game against a team and an opponent that he is somewhat familiar with. I think even almost going back to the time when, you know, seems like the Colts and the Patriots were divisional opponents every year. It seems like it's been that long, doesn't it? All right, webradio at patriots.com. The email address, 855-PATS-500, toll-free telephone number on Twitter. Kev says, my biggest nitpick so far and going forward is the terrible officiating. Penalty 1 week and not the next. Kev's in Suffolk, UK. And he says, my Pats nitpicks would be Vereen dropping balls and wheel routes and stopping the run on D. All right, a couple of good ones. Dropping balls on wheel routes. He hasn't done that as much lately, although I think teams have been keen to his wheel routes, so I'm not sure that that's really been open as the Friars, as the Patriots would like it to be. I was just looking at another tweet, sorry. as far as the penalty and the officiating, I'd have to disagree, Kev. I understand you're nitpicking here, so there's really no right or wrong, and I can't say that it's entirely wrong, but I actually think the officials now have almost shied away from a willingness to throw the flag when what we thought earlier in the year was a penalty doesn't seem to be as much now, and that's why I said off the top of the program today, that's one of my biggest worries about the penalties going forward. I think they're going to start throwing the flags again to make sure that they reemphasize that, hey, this is a point of emphasis in the NFL. No holding and no offensive pass interference. We're cutting down on the contact past the 5-yard chuck zone. We just are. That worries me. Thank you, Kev, for that. Appreciate it. Chanel says, my nitpick is my app to hear the show. It isn't working. So I have to listen on PC. and then she says, anyways, have to set up a run game and lower penalties. Well, agree with you in both cases right there, Chanel. I can only tell you, Chanel, try downloading the app again. Hopefully you've been able to do that. Just eliminate the app from your phone, whatever you have, and then just try downloading it again and see if that helps it. I know that when I've had trouble with apps like the Patriots app in particular in the past, I will delete it. I will power down my phone and make sure everything resets, and then I will power it back up, and then I will download it again. Sometimes that works. I'd say more often than not, that usually works. I don't know what kind of phone you have. I have one of the Samsungs, so it seems to have worked with mine. Hopefully it will work for you, and you can get us back on your app. But I'm glad you're taking the time to listen to us on your PC. Always good to know. What else do we have here? We have several emails that are pouring in here on our original one. Here's a good one from our friend Howard in Stratford, Connecticut. Says the first team, and he's just for the record here, he's listed 2, 3, 4, 5 years of the top two teams in penalties. And he says, the first team is the Super Bowl winner. The second team is the Super Bowl loser. The number in front of their name is their league rank in penalties for that year. All right. In 2013, number one was Seattle. Number two was Denver. So the top two teams in the NFL in penalties last year were 1 and 2. In the finish. In 2012, the number one team in penalties was Baltimore, and they won the Super Bowl. Number three in penalties was San Francisco. They lost the Super Bowl. In 2011, as we all know, the Giants beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl. The Giants were 6th in penalties. The Patriots were only 25th in penalties when they lost the Super Bowl in 2011. In 2010, Green Bay won the Super Bowl. They were 16th in penalties. Pittsburgh lost the Super Bowl, and they were 5th in penalty yardage. And then back in 2009, the Saints won the Super Bowl. They were 10th in penalties. The Colts lost the Super Bowl. They were 28th in penalties. So Howard says, it seems over the last 5 years that the Super Bowl winner, other than in 2010, has come from a top 10 penalized team in the league. True. And of the last 10 participants in the Super Bowl, 7 of the 10 have also been top 10 penalized teams. Now, do I agree stupid penalties like false starts, offsides, illegal motion need to be lessened? Well, absolutely. However, I don't know that Browner or anyone on D, for that matter, knocking the snot out of an opposing wide receiver, getting a penalty but bringing attitude to this D is one we need to adjust. You know, that's a really good point, Howard. I'm glad you pointed out, because I hesitated when thinking that through my whole reasoning on my penalties being my chief nitpick before today's show. And I agreed. I said, you know what? At some time, you need an attitude adjustment. And Browner is the one guy, I think, on the defense, we can all agree, that seemed to have picked up, you know, the steam from, or originally it was, you know, probably Darrelle Revis, with all the excitement of him being a potential shutdown cornerback there. And then, you know, Revis had some so-so games early. A lot of that is because he was playing some zone, which a lot of people didn't realize. And the Patriots were asking him to play zone and not being more of the press man cover that he really is and that he's particularly adept at. That was his strength. Zone was not his strength. Nevertheless, Browner comes in after his time away and brings that swagger, brings that attitude. Sometimes, you know, rap of the mouth, you know, kind of gets you other guys around you going a little bit, you know, bringing that defensive, you know, not taking any crap mentality. And I think I understand exactly where you're coming from, and I think that is a very invaluable key to have on your side. I agree. Sometimes you need a kickstarter. So there is a difference, however, a fine line between bringing attitude and committing a penalty that's going to keep a team on the field. This is where discipline and field awareness, situational awareness, must come into play, which is what I was emphasizing the most. Because you could have a team in 3rd and 10 or 3rd and 12 and commit a defensive holding penalty, and you're going to give a team an automatic first down, and you're not going to get off the field, and you've just defeated the purpose. I mean, if it's 1st or 2nd down, you probably say, all right, we can get away with that a little bit more. You know, if you want to, you know, go in with an attitude adjustment type of hit or a play. 3rd down, you can't do that at all. I don't care how much attitude a defense needs. You can't do that on any 3rd down situations unless the guy's beating you for a touchdown. You can't do it. It's pure stupidity, and it's gonna cost you. It's gonna keep your team on the field when you need to get your defense off the field. And again, even more so this week against the Colts, you want to keep the ball out of Andrew Luck's hands, the number one offense in the NFL. And you want to keep these guys off the field as much as you possibly can. So that means you have to get off the field on 3rd down as much as you possibly can. You got to, or you're going to get burnt. Scarecrow. And Howard says, it would appear from the stats above that the aggressive teams that push the envelope with respect to the rules go the furthest in the postseason. Time will tell if that plays out this year, too. Can't argue that point, Howard, and I'm glad you took the time to divvy that out there. But I'm going to tell you that over the next month, that's not going to help the Patriots. You know, playing with a swagger and playing with a tood back there in the backfield ain't going to help anybody when you're going up against dynamic offenses that you're getting ready to face. Your primary focus has to be getting off the damn field, period, and put the ball in the hands of your own dynamic offense and quarterback in Brady. It's pretty simple, really, when you think about it. Gabe says, John, I have a question for you. With all the talk from Brady and about Gronk and how he's a mismatch, do you think or don't you think that it's showing your hand too much? And if they take Gronk out as best as they can, do you think down the stretch maybe we keep him healthy for the playoffs and not use him as much? Mm-mm. No. I don't think that at all. He says, I want to see more development with Timms and Wright. Why is Josh not putting more plays for both of them? Really spread the other team's D, and it would really help the run game as well. I feel we're going to need those guys in weeks to come. Where are the plays for the playmakers? I understand what you're saying, Gabe, but as far as Gronk is concerned, look, you can't do anything about, you know, saving him for the playoffs. No, football players have to play. I had never bought into that. I will never buy into that, saving somebody because you're going to lessen their ability for injury. Well, of course, if you're not going to play him, you're not going to have a chance to get injured. That's true. But he's also not going to help your football team. Are we that concerned about keeping a guy around for the long haul, that we're going to have to hold him out from meaningful football? And would you not say that going up against the number one team in the NFL in terms of offense is meaningful football this Sunday night? That this next month is not meaningful football when you have, you know, division leaders in two or three out of the four games you're getting ready to play and everybody is a playoff contender? No, no. Got to play him, man. Now, if you want to, you know, talk to me about, you know, Buffalo at the end of the year in the last home game of the regular season and you've already clinched a, you know, a bye, then, okay, I could certainly buy not playing guys, even though you're going to get another week off to rest. I could buy it a little bit more then, but not now. Not when games still mean something. And what did Bill Belichick say after last week's win over Denver? Seven wins has got you nowhere. It's not going to win you anything in this league at all. Now, as far as the development with Timms and Wright, they're going to continue to develop. And I'm not so sure that they haven't put more plays in for both of them and spread other teams out. But again, you know, you're going to want to go with the guys that you know are going to be there as opposed to the guys you hope are going to be there. And really, that's the difference I see in guys like Edelman and Gronk versus guys like Timms and Wright, as you suggest, Gabe. You got almost a sure thing against a, well, that would be nice type of scenario. No-brainer. Plays for those playmakers, you know what? If they need to make plays, the ball will be targeted in their direction. Dagmar in Miami, he says, John, I would say my main concern is that our offense may become one-dimensional by the end of the season and therefore be too predictable. That I have seen it happen before, and believe me, is not the first time I call for a solid running game to be an essential for this team to close the deal. I have something else to say, and that is regarding T.Y. Hilton, whom I watched very well during his college years since our schools are in same division rivals. Hilton has a lot of speed, good footage, good hands, and also great while having a lot of space. But he is not a physical guy. I tell you that if you put a physical corner on him, he is done for the night. He has no arm strength to fight with a physical corner for the ball and can't have his top speed if you bump him at the line. If the bats do that to him, you will see a different Hilton and not the flashy free-release guy that you see on the highlights. By the way, if the bats do that to him, you can thank me later. Go Pats.
So we'll turn into Paris Hilton then.
Oh! Give yourself a rim shot. Good job, Kay Collins. That has to be that has to be a theme for the week or a new hashtag. T.Y. Hilton to Paris Hilton.
I like it.
I like that. Gosh. Actually, I think Dagmar makes
Maybe I'm setting up a match. Maybe they'll get hitched.
Oh, wow.
You don't even have to change your last name.
No, she wouldn't. Unless she could be Paris Hilton Hilton.
It's kind of like me. I'm technically Kevin Russell Kevin Collins.
Kevin Russell Kevin Collins.
Oh, so okay, just here. To be a smart aleck.
Yeah.
So I'm Catholic, and you have to pick like a confirmation name when you're like 15.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to go through the whole thing and sit in church and whatever. So you have to do a report on a saint, and I picked Saint Kevin on purpose, so that when the priest got up and did the whole, you know, hand over the head thing, I now proclaim you, Kevin Russ, and he like stuttered and stammered and bumbled, and I'm sitting there laughing my ass off in the middle of the church.
Way to embarrass the priest, Kev.
It was great.
You're going to hell. I would say.
See you there, brother.
Yeah, exactly. Meet you there. We're all going to hell. Meet you there. I actually think, Dagmar, you kind of touched on a real key for this game. The fact that physicality can apparently take him a bit out of the play. Be interesting to see who the Patriots decide to match up with him. That's really great. And you're absolutely right. If the Pats do that to him, we'll talk about it next week for sure. Might we see a little bit of Browner? I still think it's going to be Revis. I still deep down think it's going to be Revis. Maybe they switch off on him. Maybe they alternate a little bit. Maybe they give Andrew Luck some different looks, kind of like they did to Manning a couple of weeks ago. I think that's also highly likely. Physical play. Yeah, that's good points by you, Dagmar. Excellent analyzation here at the early stage of the week for a Tuesday. Jason from Cork, Ireland. Been listening for a while. Usually get you on replays. Don't get the chance to email live much, but I'm worried about the next four games. I think if the Pats come out 2-2, I'll be happy, especially with back-to-back road games. My question is, what do you think the Pats' record will be after the next four? One more question. With games in Green Bay and San Diego the following week, how much does that affect the team with practice and travel? Oh, all right. I like that. Let's take your first one. He says he'll be happy if the Pats come out 2-2. I think, Jason, you'll be the only person that may be within earshot of my voice right now who would be happy with 2-2. I think there'd be the majority of fans would be happy with 3-1, and clearly everybody would be ecstatic with 4-0, and I'm sure some people feel like that will be the case. I don't know anybody would be happy with 2-2, especially in light of the two games offensively that they're coming off of. But I'll play the game with you. What do I think the Pats record will be after the next four? Well, I'm going to stick with my original prediction from the very beginning of the season, before the season launched, before it started, and I went through the schedule and I picked them all out, win, loss, win, loss. Right now I'm only a game off of that. I said the Patriots at the bye week would be 8-1, and they're 7-2. I think it's a miracle that I'm that close, to be honest with you, considering how poorly they played in the opening month of the season. But I also had another loss coming. I actually had the loss in San Diego as opposed to Green Bay. I'm ready, I think, now to probably reverse that and say they've got a better chance in San Diego than they do in Green Bay. But nevertheless, I'll take 3-1 in the next four, which means I think after the next month this team will be 10-3. They're 7-2 right now. Give them 3-1 on top of that, so 10-3 heading into December. How do you feel about that? And I think 10-3 would certainly be good enough for first place, and I think 10-3 will also have them in position for either the 1 or the 2 in the AFC, even at 10-3. Now, I think 2-2, you're in trouble. You're going to be in a little bit of trouble because at 2-2, that's going to give you four losses. And then you could be behind you could be behind Kansas City. You could be behind Indy. You could be behind Denver. You could be in trouble. Hell, you could be behind Cleveland. Can you believe that? Cleveland in first place? Shocking. So, at any rate, 2-2, you're in trouble. 3-1, you're still in pretty good shape as far as a bye is concerned. And then as far as games with Green Bay and San Diego the following, how much does that affect the team in practice and travel? Well, in actuality, it's my understanding, I heard this late last week, that the team is planning on staying out west between the Green Bay and San Diego games. So after Green Bay, they're going to go ahead and fly out to the West Coast. They will not be coming back here to Foxborough after the Green Bay game and then go cross-country even a day or so early to San Diego. From Green Bay, they're going to go right out to San Diego and going to headquarter in California for the week, feeling like that will give them a better chance to get prepared with less travel to deal with. So they'll be practicing that whole week prior to the San Diego Chargers game. They will be practicing in California. Now, don't ask me where. Don't ask me when. I don't know that information. I can certainly tell you the practices will not be open. I'm sure at some point when they decide to make it public where they'll be practicing, that you might be able to get out there at some point. But it won't be like, training camp that's free and open to the public around here in Foxborough. It won't be anything like that. All I know is that they've decided pretty much to stay west and not come back here after Green Bay, and they're going to go right out to California and prepare for the Chargers out in California. That's all I know. But hopefully that helps you and answers your question. Steve in Killeen says, John, I know that taking the Colts for granted will be done so to our own peril. Luck is trending to become one of the elite quarterbacks in the NFL, and the Colts have weapons. No question about that, Steve. However, I've already stated that I believe the Patriots will run the table given the following factors. Return of key players at the perfect time in the season, a solidified offensive line, elevated special teams play, a defense that is able to create turnovers, and oh yeah, that Gronk guy. I hear he's pretty hard for the rest of the league to match up against. Reference the one-handed catch from previous game that had Brady stating, how the bleep did he catch that? Yeah, that's true. Pretty hard for the rest of the league to match up with. So teams are probably going to have to devote one and a half or two guys to him. Who gets it opened up for them as a result of that? That has to be one of the keys for the Patriots. That's number one. As far as players returning, Well, it's still going to be a couple of weeks. This is week 11, so I don't think it's until after week 12 that we can see Silver Salinga. And if he does return after next week, then at whose expense does he return? You know, does he return at the expense of, you know, the tackle they just picked up? Does he return the expense of a guy like Casey Walker? I mean, you know, at whose expense does he return? So, I mean, you know, it could help. It also might be a wash because here's a guy that, you know, even though I know he's practicing a little bit, he's still, you know, unable to play. So in what kind of game shape will he really be? And we still don't know yet about Chandler Jones. We don't have any idea about Chandler Jones. We've had conflicting media reports even here in New England say that, you know, Jones is going to be gone a month and Jones might be gone for the entire regular season and not return until the playoffs. So we don't really know. Solidified offensive line, I'll certainly give you that. But I think each week is its own special, you know, case. And let's hope that that continues. Elevated special teams play, I agree with. Defense able to create turnovers, and that has to continue. You know, you've been number one in the league in takeaways, so that's going to have to continue for this team, I think, to have short field and for this team to continue to throw up points like it has been able to do over the last 2 to 3 weeks. So I'd agree with you on that stuff. But, you know, the Colts are going to be a handful, especially in offense. And I know we'll spend a lot of time this week talking about that. Sean in Vancouver. My friend and I were having a discussion about running the ball and play action. Against the Broncos, New England didn't run that ball that frequently nor successfully. I feel the play action worked because for some reason Denver was still respecting the run, especially on first down. That's a good point. My friend didn't believe that to be the case. He felt that it was the line just giving Brady the time he needed. He insists that play action only works when you have success running the ball. Denver did pressure Brady, but it wasn't during the play action pass. Well, look, play action has to be respected if you're a guy like Brady. Because if you don't respect play action, if you don't freeze for a second and the ball does get handed off, you're going to catch your linebackers flat-footed. If he gets by the line of scrimmage, that's where you can turn a 2 or 3 yard gain into 6 or 7 or more. It's that fine a difference. And with a guy like Jonas Gray who hits the hole arguably as quickly as Stephen Ridley does, that's why the linebacker has to be ready to commit. So they freeze for just a split second before committing to make sure that the runner could be coming at them or they've got to go and jam the hole. I think play action works, period. Now, you do have to have a running game because if you're running game, this is where your friend is also accurate, I think, Sean, because if you don't have a game that has gotten yardage, then if you're a linebacker, you're not going to believe it when the quarterback goes back to pass. You're not going to believe it until there's some positive yardage that comes out. So it's sort of a double-edged sword. But I still believe, moreover, that the play action worked against Denver because they respected the run. Not so much that the Patriots didn't have success running the ball. He says, I also agree with you that New England will have to run the ball with more success or Brady will no longer have that kind of time in the pocket. Our opponents watch game film. They'll focus more on the passing game. Bingo. That's exactly it. That's where your friend is also going to be accurate. Bingo. That success is going to need to pick itself up as play progresses here over the next month. If you don't have some success running the ball, teams are going to say, the Patriots are in two out of every three plays, they're going to throw the ball. So you're going to see a lot of sub-defensive packages rather than standard basic packages defensively against the Patriots. And so then it becomes an entire game plan manner against a team that's in a sub-package, playing with a nickel or even a dime formation. And that's going to change your whole way of calling plays. It can be somewhat problematic if you're not terribly careful with it. All right. What else do we have here? I had a couple of other, I think. Benjamin sent me a couple of other notes on Facebook here. Random question, Broncos game. They're dominating, and it's time for Manning to come out and Osweiler to get ready. Talking about the Broncos, I believe. How do you feel about that? I'll be honest with you, Benjamin. I do not. I won't follow the Broncos again until probably there's an opportunity to play them in the playoffs. So, in all honesty, what Denver does is entirely up to them. 12-4, he says, not very sexy at all. That's where I don't think that's the best seeding for us, but I don't hate it. 12-4 could end up being that kind of a number. 12-4, I think, probably still gets them a bye, but it'll be touch and go. Touch and go. Nip. I mean, that's don't really know. I feel a lot better at 13-3 at having a chance at the bye as opposed to 12-4, because then it could come down to tiebreakers. But again, we are talking about playoffs, and that's still more than a month away. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening in today on Nitpick Tuesday. Thanks to Eric Friends from Boston.com for joining us, as he does in the playbook on Tuesdays. Tomorrow, same Pats time, same Pats channel, 2 p.m. Eastern time, and we turn that page forward and begin the breakdown of those Indianapolis Colts. We touched on a little of that today because I know you're just ready for it after not having a week of football, having the bye week a week ago. Kind of made today a little bit slow, but so I figured we'd have to jump into it at least a little bit, and we'll jump into it a little bit more tomorrow at 2. Want to hear from you as well on WTF, hashtag, what's the focus Wednesday, WTF Wednesday. We'll have a good focus for you. Count on that. Fantasy football champs coming up next right here on Patriots.com radio. See you tomorrow.
Thank you for downloading this podcast from Patriots.com. Log on anytime for more news and more podcasts from your favorite team and Patriots.com.